Iris existed for me as a wonderful and solitary being. First seen bicycling past the window in St. Anthony's College, where I was living. Trying to work and gazing idly out at the passing scene on the Woodstock Road, I noticed the lady on the bicycle. She seemed at once to me more of a lady than a girl, and wondered who she was and whether I would ever meet her. Perhaps I fell in love. Certainly, it was in the innocence of love that I indulged the momentary fantasy that nothing had ever happened to her, that she was simply bicycling about, waiting for me to arrive. She was looking both absent and displeased, maybe because of the weather, which was damp and drizzly, maybe because her bicycle was old and creaky and hard to propel, maybe because she hadn't yet met me? Her head was down, as if she were driving on thoughtfully towards some goal, whether emotional or intellectual. I remember a friend saying playfully, after she first met Iris, "She's like a little bull." It's true, in a way, although I have never seen it, because, of course, I have never seen her objectively. But if each of us resembles some sort of animal or bird, then I can see that Iris could indeed be a small bull. Not unfriendly, but both resolute and unpredictable, looking reflectively out from under lowered brows as it walks with head down towards you. There had been something almost supernatural about the way I had actually met Iris after I had seen her riding past the window on her bicycle. The following day, I had encountered Miss Griffiths in the street. A diminutive figure, she was just taking off her billowing black gown, preparatory to mounting her own bicycle and cycling home to St. Anne's College. She had been lecturing on Beowulf. Miss Griffiths had had a soft spot for me ever since my viva, when she had congratulated me on my essay on Chaucer's Knight's Tale, but caught me out on a minor question of Anglo-Saxon syntax. Now she seized me by the arm as I walked past and inquired how things were going. Things, in fact, were barely going at all, as I had no proper job and stayed on sufferance in the newly founded St. Anthony's College, where I was supposed to act as a tutor and guide to a few ebullient Frenchmen and Americans who'd come to study science or politics there. Out of the deference I felt for an older and senior member of the English faculty, I walked a few yards that morning beside Miss Griffiths. I think she wanted to enjoy reminiscing for a moment about the exam and the viva, and to recall with the pleasure of generosity her discussion about the good points of my Chaucer essay, as well as to remind me, with the pleasure of superior knowledge, about my errors in Old English grammar. Having done those things, she suddenly asked if I would care to come to her college room for a drink that evening. I was happy to accept. Miss Griffiths was just finishing a tutorial when I presented myself at 6 o'clock, and as I knocked on the door, a young girl in a scholar's gown came out, dropping her eyes demurely at the sight of a man standing there. I barely glanced at her, for through the open doorway, I had caught sight of the person on the bicycle, standing with a well-filled glass in her hand. She looked different from the bicycle lady, naturally enough. This woman certainly had a serious look, and it dawned on me that my bicycle lady, who this clearly was, must be an academic of some sort. That gave me an immediate feeling of despondency. It placed her, and I disliked the idea that she should be placed, even by myself. At the same time, I was heartened by her general appearance, and its total absence of anything that for me in those days constituted sex appeal. There was nothing so conventional as that about this woman. She was not a girl, and she had no girlish attractions. That made the fact that I was in love with her much more exciting. In the early summer, St. Anthony's College gave a modest dance, a much simpler affair than the big college balls, which are held after the end of the summer term and go on all night long. Although I was not by training or by temperament a dancing man, I determined to go, nonetheless, and to ask Iris if she would come with me. To my astonishment, and not altogether to my delight, Iris accepted with alacrity. This caused a further range of complications in my heart, as there were practical problems which might well follow. Other people, my colleagues at St. Anthony's, would ask her to dance. And suppose one of them were to fall in love with her, or she with him? It did not then occur to me that she might equally well become attached to one of the girls who would be present. At 6:30, I went to collect Iris in her college room, waiting outside the door after I had knocked. While waiting, I speculated on what she would look like, what she would be wearing. I assumed, and rather hoped, it would be something dark, preferably black, suited to the person of mature years and sober disposition, which I still assumed and hoped her to be. Was it not these imagined qualities in her which had attracted me so strongly when I first saw her on her bicycle? The door opened. An apparition in what seemed a sort of flame-coloured brocade stood before me. I felt, in some way, scandalized, dazzled, but appalled at the same time. All my daydreams, my illusions and preconceptions about the woman, the girl, the lady of the bicycle, seemed to have torn away and vanished back into a past which I would still very much have preferred to be inhabiting, given the choice. But I had no choice. The person before me was exactly the same as the one riding the bicycle. I still thought her face homely and kindly, not in any conventional sense pretty or attractive, even if it was a strong face in its own blunt-featured, snub-nosed way. And for me, it was always mysterious, too. But now I was seeing it as other people saw it. Although it was in no way conventional itself, its trappings, so to speak, were now conventional. Their appearance disappointed me sadly. They seemed the sort of thing that any girl would wear, a silly girl who had not the taste to choose her clothes carefully. I felt, in a resigned way now, that I was taking some quite different girl to the dance. St. Anthony's was a former Anglican convent, built around 1870. A steep flight of stone steps led down to the crypt below the nuns' chapel, now the library, in which the dance was to be held. As we went down, Iris trod on her long dress, slipped and slid inelegantly down a few steps on her behind. People descending before and after us rushed to help me help her get up. I found myself entertaining the unworthy thought that she might have sprained her ankle, not badly, but enough to incapacitate her for the evening. She would not wish to stay on the sidelines, and I could take her home. Perhaps we could go on talking in her room. But Iris was not hurt at all. She got up and smiled, while the others brushed her down amid laughter and joking. The ice was already broken as far as fellow dancers were concerned. We moved onto the floor among a crowd who all seemed to be chatting to us and to each other. I made a few introductions. She seemed already to have made new friends. Her manner was no longer quiet and withdrawn. I made unconfident gestures indicative of asking her to dance, and we assumed the appropriate semi-embrace. My dancing was indeed unconfident. Iris smiled at me encouragingly, but soon relinquished me and began to execute arm twirlings and arabesques on her own. When we brushed accidentally against a dancing couple a few seconds later, and the man turned with a smile and seized hold of her, she melted into him at once, and the pair swung off together in perfect unison. The girl, whom the man had been with, did not look best pleased, but she too had no choice but to smile at me as we began to revolve in some sort of way. I felt the dance was already going against me, and that success, whatever it might have consisted in, had already gone beyond recall. The band gave a flourish and stopped. Iris came back to me at once, looking happy and relaxed. She asked about my room in the college, which she'd not yet seen. I asked if she would like to go up there for a minute, thinking of the bottle of champagne I'd bought that morning and put in my cupboard along with two glasses. She said she would like to very much. I took her arm as we mounted the stone steps in case she had another fall. My room was small and spartan, but there was a gas fire, which I now turned on. I got the bottle and glasses out of the cupboard. As I put them down on the table, we fell into each other's arms. It seemed as natural as it had been to take her arm when coming up the stairs, or for her to take my hand for a minute when we'd left her own room in St. Anne's. We never returned to the dance floor, but sat in my room until 2 in the morning. We talked without stopping. I had no idea I could talk like that, and I'm sure she never knew she could either. It was endless, childish chatter, putting our faces together as we talked. I think Iris was accustomed only to talk properly, as it were, considering, pausing, modifying, weighing her words, to talk like a philosopher and a teacher. Now she babbled like a child. So did I. With arms around each other, kissing and rubbing noses, we rambled on and on, seeming to invent on the spot, and as we talked, a whole infantile language of our own. She put her head back and laughed at me incredulously from time to time, and I think we both felt incredulous. She seemed to be giving way to some deep need of which she had been wholly unconscious, the need to throw away not only the manoeuvres and rivalries of intellect, but the emotional fears and fascinations, the power struggles and surrenders of adult loving. Long, long afterwards, I was having to look through her manuscripts and papers to find some stuff requested by the publisher. In the back of an exercise book containing notes for a novel were what seemed to be a few entries, some dated, others random observations, comments on books, philosophers, people she knew, denoted only by initial. One entry, dated June 3, 1954, read, St. Anthony's Dance, fell down the steps, and seemed to have fallen in love with Jay. We didn't dance much.